Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in as we are live here on The Drive on an interesting day here in Houston. We thought we'd be talking about the Texans today, but we didn't know we'd have the big story of the very surprising decision to release C.J. Gardner-Johnson by the Houston Texans, and nobody better than to at least get your thoughts on this. And that's our guy, NBC Sports Pro Football Talks, Mike Florio. And by the way, check out Mike's new book, his latest book, The Big Shield. And I know my guy Tyler, who is really into sports betting, this is probably going to be a read for him and others that are into that. But make sure you go check that out. It is available on Amazon today. But Mike, what are you hearing? Because it is interesting. I heard you yesterday talking about something's going on over there. It reminded you of the Eagles of a couple of years ago when there was some issues going on that led to the downfall of their season. And then we hear that Gardner-Johnson is oddly released today. What's your thoughts and what are you hearing about the situation in Houston?
Well, just generally, and I said this on our show yesterday, there's a weird vibe that comes from the Texans, and I'd love to be able to peel back the curtain and get to the truth about what's really happening, because it just seems like something is off generally, and it's the kind of thing they're not going to advertise. But with Gardner-Johnson, and I see that Aaron Wilson of KPRC has reported this, it's not a surprise that there's friction behind the scenes between C.J. Gardner-Johnson and teammates, because that's how he ended up in Houston in the first place. He had some rant at some point before training camp that he was too competitive for the Eagles' liking, which makes no sense because you want competitive players, and everybody in the NFL is inherently competitive or they wouldn't be there, but there's a line that you don't want to cross, and he presumably had crossed it. And with the Texans at 0-3, and it may not take much to have a guy who's being divisive and disruptive, who's maybe calling players out or a little too angry over the situation or whatever it is that caused the Eagles to say, we got to get this guy out of here, manifesting itself already in Houston, causing the organization to say, we got to get this guy out of here. Doesn't matter they traded for him, we got to get this guy out of here, and it's going to be better. It's going to be addition by subtraction, and I assume that that's exactly what it was. It's more about personality and getting along with others or not than it is about his playing.
Yeah, Mike, the strange part of that is he just played 93% of the snaps at safety, and a couple of weeks ago they just pushed some money forward and gave him more guaranteed money, I believe, in a contract. So the whole thing is just wild to think that they had that much trust and that much faith in a guy that has, like as you mentioned, the reputation of you know, making waves at the very least, and now here we are in this spot. I want to go back, though, Mike, to your original point, because I think you had this take before this news dropped of just, like, again, the what's going on behind closed doors with the Texans. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Of is that a Nick Caserio kind of New Englandish Bill Belichick type of thing? Is it CJ and a young head coach? Like, what made you get into that mind space?
Well, it started really in the aftermath of week one when C.J. Stroud came out and said that we can't have lollygagging. We got to be ready to play. And he had some pretty strong comments and criticisms about some of the other players. And we're just kind of in a spot where something seems strange and something seems off, and the inability to close games. They've been in every game that they've played, but it just feels to me, and this is based on doing this for 25 years, and you start to pick up on the clues and the hints and the patterns, something's obviously not right. And with each loss, and this is something Chris Sims told me back when we started working together in 2017, the pressure that mounts when you're in a locker room that goes from 0-1 to 0-2 is significant. It goes from 0-2 to 0-3. It's even more significant. It just feels like, with nothing specific to point to other than the C.J. Stroud comments after the week one loss, it just feels like something's up. It feels like something's off, and it feels like there are deeper issues than scoring fewer points than the other team. And it's rarely going to be advertised, but the fact that they are cutting C.J. Gardner-Johnson for nothing and letting him walk away with whatever he's been paid and not trying to turn it around, that's a symptom of it. And it could just be that whatever is happening and whatever that pressure is doing to cause problems did come to a head already, and we'll see what more happens in the aftermath of that. It's just something to monitor. And, you know, we never really got the full story about why the 2023 Eagles fell apart after a 10-1 start, but it just felt like something was going on, and it still feels that something was going on between players that made it turn personal and guys not liking each other and enough of a problem that they just couldn't win a game once everything bubbled over in late November, early December of that season.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joins us. By the way, check out his book, his latest book, Big Shield. You can get a copy of Big Shield on Amazon today. And I think a big frustration is they are really pretty much damn near dead last in every major offensive category, including scoring 12.7 points a game and only being to the red zone four times all season, 0-4 in that category. And the big thing they did was they revamped with getting a new coordinator, getting a new offensive line coach, made the move with Laremy Tunsil, brought in some new parts. And that seems to have really, at least, at the very least, to be kind, a slow start. And it seems like that might be a situation. Were you surprised that they made all of those moves to begin with, moving on from Bobby Slowick after what he had done his first 2 years with C.J. Stroud in this offense?
I was surprised, but I respected, in theory, the idea that the Texans, two straight years, you know, the pattern was very similar, 2023 and 2024. Win the games you're supposed to win, lose the games you're supposed to lose. When it all adds up, it's enough to win a weak division. Underdogs at home in the wild card round of the playoffs both years. Score an impressive victory over a team that was supposedly, air quotes, better. And then go on the road and play respectably against an elite team. That's the pattern. And you know, I've criticized teams for having the attitude that just good enough is just good enough, and it would have been easy to stay the course, keep Bobby Slowick, not make major changes on the offensive line, and be complacent but profitable and relevant. But it struck me as an effort to kind of go all in and get to the next level. So I like that. But the problem is when you make major changes, you've got to win early, because if you have any lingering questions in the locker room about why are we doing this, why are things different, why are we making these changes, you had to get guys to buy in. I think that's why last night's win for the Lions was so critical. You have eight new assistant coaches. You got new coordinators, not because they were fired, but because they graduated elsewhere to become head coaches. But still, when you make changes like that, it's critical to get the players to buy into the new way that things are being done. You need wins to get the players to buy in. So I like that they did it, but obviously it feels like at some level that's one of the factors in whatever's going on that's causing the team to be 0-3 and to create this sense, this vague sense that is highly unlikely to ever be admitted and shared by way of specifics with anyone, that something's going on and they're having a hard time getting past whatever it is.
Mike, what is your y'all's take on C.J. Stroud on two fronts, just the overall play and the regression that we've seen, and then on the other part of that, like kind of as it relates to, you know, being the next $60 million man in the NFL?
Well, those numbers are going to be harder to reach if he keeps playing like he's been playing. And ultimately, you know, the quarterback is the leader of the team. And when he comes out and calls his shot after week one and tries to shake guys up a little bit, and it results in two more losses of games they could have slash should have won that they were in late, that becomes a little more glaring. And, you know, it's impossible to know who to blame for the breakdowns that you see. And I've seen the videos on social media where people are breaking down film and they're trying to blame this on CJ and that on CJ. And maybe they're right. We just don't know. It's 11 different pieces that are moving in unison or not. And, you know, some of the throws have been off when he's had time. And I know people are trying to blame the offensive line, but a quarterback's got to deal with the hand he's been dealt. And not everyone has perfect protection where they can stand back there and, you know, kind of bounce on the balls of their feet and wait for a guy to come open. At some point, you got to be able to deliver even if you are under siege, because every quarterback at some point is, and he just hasn't. And this is that key third year for him, eligible for a new contract after the regular season ends. And it may very well be that they're not ready to offer him the kind of money that he may have thought he was going to get based upon what happens this year. It all comes down to the next 14 games and whether he improves, whether the team improves, but they're being left in the dust by the Indianapolis Colts. And I think this weekend's game is critical when you have the former Houston Oilers coming to town and they're desperate for a win and they've looked far worse than the Texans by way of being competitive. Lose that one, you really got a problem.
Mike, what about, I know, tell me if this is crazy or not. It's a world that we live in today, right? And I think C.J. Stroud has a case to plead. At this point in time, the way things are going, David Mulugeta is his agent. You know, is this a situation that you could see brewing here where there's some noise of, does C.J. Stroud even want to be here? And before, like, my point in asking that is because it's fair. I'm an old quarterback. It's very fair to look at the last 2 years, whether it's the OC hires, the supporting cast, you know, being beat to hell. I mean, there's a real possibility where CJ could go, man, I mean, this has just been rough as hell. I need to see if the grass is greener. Is it too early to think that? Am I crazy to think that could be possible in 2025?
Well, remember, they drafted CJ Stroud a year after Deshaun Watson. Yep. Got what he wanted, represented by the same agent. Much was made that they weren't going to hold anything against David Mulugeta for the way the Deshaun Watson situation ended. But the reality is David Mulugeta knows the blueprint to get a guy out of Houston if he wants to. And when you consider everything that was going on with Deshaun Watson, sat out the whole year, upset supposedly about not being consulted in the hiring of a coach and a GM, and then the 20-plus lawsuits that were filed against him. And Mulugeta navigated that and got the guy what he wanted. He got the guy a massive contract, got him to the team he wanted to go to, not necessarily because that's where he wanted to play, but because they made him an offer he couldn't refuse financially. And even though it's been a disaster from the Browns' standpoint, he got what he wanted, and his agent got it for him. So, you know, no one's ever going to come out and say, I really don't want to be here, except Tyreek Hill. But you rarely see a franchise quarterback come out and say it. Deshaun Watson, I don't think ever came out and said it, but we knew it from all the reporting that was done. So I think the bottom line is this. If C.J. Stroud decides he doesn't want to play for the Texans any longer and he's got another team in mind or multiple teams in mind, he's represented by the perfect guy to press the buttons and pull the levers to make something happen.
I know Texans fans aren't ready to be thinking about that yet. But Mike, one of the,
I don't know, they may be if it keeps up this
year. Yeah, you're right. One of the things that's really, really strange, and I refuse to let it go, and I'm curious your thoughts or if you heard anything, is like the situation with Joe Mixon is just weird. We've not seen him at all. We've not seen him even outside at training camp, and Clinton and I have gone out there and been out there, and we've had representation out there every day that they've had a practice. No one's seen him. We haven't heard from him. He's eligible to come off the list and be able to play after the Titans game. Is there anything you're hearing about Joe Mixon? Because no one would assume that he's even close because we haven't even seen him.
Well, I'm not hearing anything, and I've been trying. And I got to the point where I gave up because when you beat the bushes and no birds fly out of it, you go eventually beat bushes where you're going to have more luck getting an answer. And I just think the fact that there's so much secrecy and it's so quiet, it doesn't bode well for Joe Mixon playing this year. And I think back to Nick Caserio's comments right after they set the 53-man roster. He was asked, are we going to see Joe Mixon at all this year? And his answer was, we'll see. And anybody that ever tried to get something from their parents growing up that they wanted and they heard we'll see knows what we'll see means. It means you ain't getting it. It means it ain't happening. We'll see is it just a way to say no without having to say no because you don't want to deal with what the consequences of saying no firmly and clearly right now might be.
Mike, we got hit. Last update we got hit with was we miss him. We hope he's doing okay. That didn't shed much light on the hopes of him playing either here in Houston. Hey, Mike, we appreciate you joining us, man. Can you? I know you got a new book out, Big Shield, man, and nobody better to tell all of our listeners about it today. You can get a copy of Big Shield at Amazon as we speak. But I know you're proud of this one, man.
Well, I have made many stupid decisions in my life, as my wife will attest. Arguably the stupidest is to adhere to my New Year's resolution to make all of my novels available for 99 cents in ebook form on Amazon, even the latest one, Big Shield. And this one has done far better than any of the others, really, because it's in my wheelhouse, at least from the standpoint of what I'm known for, and that's covering the NFL. So it's a story about a professional football league that is entirely fictional and not the NFL officially. I can't stop you from envisioning NFL teams as you hear the names of cities. No names of actual teams are used in the writing of the book to keep me from being sued. But it's the intersection of professional football, gambling, and the mob. And it's based on a third-string quarterback for the Las Vegas franchise. It is not the current NFL Las Vegas franchise known as the Raiders. He's corrupted by a Vegas mobster who has a network of players who provide him with inside information. And in this case, Carson Jeffrey, the third string quarterback there, is providing information both before games and during games. And that's the starting point, and everything kind of goes from there. And it's all sparked by the player unexpectedly being released by the team, much like C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I'm not saying C.J. Gardner-Johnson was providing inside information to the mob. Let's be clear on that. That was just the spark in my book that gets things rolling, and it goes from there. And for 90, I worked it out. If it takes you 10 hours to read it, and I don't know how long it takes people to read. I know sometimes it takes me a little while to just really understand what's going on. And I don't want to take my time and enjoy it. But if it's 10 hours, it's 9.9 cents per hour for entertainment. As your entertainment dollar goes, you can't find a better deal than 9.9 cents. And as the buying of anything goes, you can't find anything cheaper than 99 cents. So you can get it at Amazon right now. I'm keeping the price of the ebook at 99 cents. It's a nice diversion from the stress and the strain and the mundacity of day-to-day life. And when you have a good book that you're reading, it's just something nice to look forward to at the end of the day when you've got some free time to just unwind. And hopefully people will check it out, and I'm confident and hopeful as well that they'll enjoy it.
How'd you land on Carson Jeffries as the quarterback's name?
You know, it's funny. I had a name. This came up. I've got an agent now who's been pushing me to try other things, write some short stories. I'm working on a script for a boxing movie, and I was talking to somebody the other day, and he's like, "How'd you come up with that name?" And it's like, there's no real process to it. It's like, I need a name. Think of a name. What sounds good? How about that? And so, I'd like to say there's a greater, method, but it's just what pops into my head and what sounds right. That was pretty much it.
All right, so
I have been asked if Carson Jeffrey is patterned after my partner Chris Sims, and I haven't thought about that, but the subconscious has a mind of its own, because this guy is kind of tall, he's got a giant head like a truck battery, and he's kind of a dumbass, so it could be Chris Sims.
Damn, Mike.
That is great.
What a dismount. All right, man, we appreciate you jumping on with us, and go ahead, check out Big Shield, and you can get it right now on Amazon today. Mike, always a pleasure having you with us.
Great talking to you guys.
All right, that's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Catch him on Football Night in America on Sundays on NBC as well. All right, let's do a little real or fake. I say a statement. You let me know if it's real or fake. That's coming up next.
Deshaun Watson is so freaking awesome.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in. Shout out to Mike Florio for joining us. He cracked me up. That man said, "Yeah, man, tried. I tried. I just gave up on the Joe Mixon stuff."
He works hard at it too.
Just threw in the towel on that thing.
They broke him.
I said,
"That's what they're hoping we do." That's what they're hoping we do, right?
Yeah, I guess. I'm not. All right. Let's do a little real or fake. 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. If and when I make this statement, you let me know if it's real or fake. I'll throw this to you first, Tyler. Real or fake? The Texans would be crazy to give C.J. Stroud a new deal after this season. Real or fake?
Repeat that. I'm very sorry. I was
the Texans would be crazy to give C.J. Stroud a new deal after this season. He's eligible. Real or fake?
As it stands right now, that is absolutely real. Absolutely real. You got another year to play around with. If it keeps trending in this direction and we see 18 weeks of what we've seen with the offense, not saying it's all on Stroud, but he's a damn big part of it. Yeah, I think that's very real.
I think it's real. I think it's real at this point. You actually T, have 2 years. Don't forget about that fifth-year option.
Right,
that
right.
First round pick. So you actually have 2 years. Now, this should surprise nobody because I am typically a guy that would rather at least 4 years watch them play and see what they got. Taking a big risk and making a guy a commitment of $60 million plus for multiple years to save whatever inflation is, and then I go to the next, you know, over the next season, I would be the one to, I want to see more. And so probably to nobody's surprise, I want to see more from C.J. Stroud. But, yeah, you look right now, I think the biggest question is two things, right? One, can you do more with less? Quarterbacks that make $60-plus million need to be able to do more with less because you're making so much money, you can't have the best supporting cast. You know, number one. Number two, and probably more importantly, if I'm making the decision, I've not seen enough from C.J. Stroud in the sense of just alpha leadership, taking control of the offense, and being a guy that isn't really – I mean, look, everybody wants the best offensive coordinator in America to be their guy. But if you can't take what you're getting as an offensive coordinator and make hay with it and do better with it and do more with it, take control of that offense – then I don't know that I can give you 60 to 65 either. So I think it's very real. I think the Texans would be crazy, given what we're watching right now, unless there's some major improvement. I think the Texans would be crazy to give him a new deal.
Is this a shift for you? Weren't you in a space where
big shift, big shift. I'd have paid him after year one. I saw enough.
Year one, you knew you might as well get on it as soon as he's eligible to get paid because it's just going to go up.
Yeah, I was convinced after year one that what we had seen was going to happen. Maybe not exactly, because with the stats he put up were unbelievable, leading the league in yards per game as well as the fewest interceptions. I don't know how many quarterbacks have ever done that, but it's got to be a few and far between. But yeah, you let this is exactly why I believe in letting things play out, right? You let it play out, and more times than not, you've seen water settle to its level. And I'm not as convinced right now that he's going to be that guy that we saw his rookie year.
I'm going to say real too, and this is a major shift for me. To me, if there is any inkling that that you're not going to move on from him or move off of him, then I think you just have to do it. And I thought the first year and a half, hell, I didn't even thought after last year. There's no way he's done enough to show you that you're going to pay him. You're going to pay him. He's done enough. Man, I don't know. At this point, man, you're giving him more control. He's got new, and it appears to be going downhill each and every start, right? It's been a while, Clint. He has shown you a space of that dude. That's a dude that is playing like a franchise quarterback. It's been a while that he has shown that. Again, as both of you have said, it's not all his fault. And there, And we said earlier, this is really starting to become not the scenario in which you would like your young franchise quarterback to be in. So, yeah, I'm surprised I'm saying this, but I'm saying real on this. All right, real or fake, Clint, we can start with you. It's not a bad move for the Rockets to look to add Russell Westbrook after the Van Fleet injury. It's not a not a bad move for the Rockets. Real or fake?
Ooh-wee, boy. I would say
this is interesting. I thought this would have been a fake immediately for you, but you're
I don't know the options, number one, that are out there, and I don't know the dynamic between him and Kevin Durant. Like, I don't know exactly where they're at. If you don't have any other options, if that's your best option, then sure. If Kevin Durant and Westbrook aren't on bad terms or at least to a point where they could play together, then obviously I would pass. But if they're on good terms, then I'm here for it.
I think I know Tyler's answer.
So
I would say down.
I would say it depends, but if I had to pick one or the other, I would say fake.
Tyler stared it down with
too much crime in NYC. Let that Ninja Turtle live. I need him. Hell nah.
Sean G said, man, that's tough. Russ and KD, I'll say fake. I'm going to say real. And this is why I'm going to say real. I still believe that Amen Thompson and Reed Shepherd should be, like, Reed should be in the starting lineup. I'm going to say real because what I've learned from Russ the last couple of years is Russ seems to understand who he is right now. Russ is not fighting coming off the bench. Russ has not been fighting his minutes. He knows that he is not a starter in this league. His time in Denver, he was fine coming off the bench. He was fine being an energy guy. Now, I mean, Russ is going to shoot a couple of threes, but I mean, you know, I think this Russ, this is not a guy who was a great player, who still thinks he's a great player and is going to go out and try to play like a great player and then try to take minutes away from, like, he is willing to come off the bench and step in and be an energy guy for the second unit. And if you put shooters around him and he's got Durant and he's got Reed Shepherd and he's got Smith around him, I think he could be a second guy off the, a backup point guard off the bench. That obviously is can be a good defender and a good energy guy. So I'm gonna say real, just because he's different. 2 years ago, Russ still thought he was a guy that should get 20 attempts. I don't think that's the same Russ that we have right now. All right, coming up, I wanted to bring this to the people. There was a tweet by a guy DJ Bieniemy who covers the Texans with ESPN, and it is sources from the Texans. Maybe a little deeper reasoning of why C.J. Gardner-Johnson had to move on for them. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Oh, crap.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, the big news of the day, the Texans, they move on from C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I find this really interesting. DJ Bieniemy does a great job covering the Texans for ESPN. He put out a piece for ESPN, and it is lengthy, but it is really interesting what we're hearing from, according to DJ Bieniemy, a Texans team source. And this is what they've had to say in response to the move they made, which is official, the move they made to release C.J. Gardner-Johnson. This, according to the piece that DJ Bieniemy wrote, each of the Texans' three losses have been by 7 points or less at minimum, according to team sources. Gardner-Johnson has allowed 3 big plays in those games that have contributed to the opposing offenses scoring touchdowns, adding that Gardner-Johnson has struggled to consistently guard the correct opposing player when required to match coverage. Based on the Texans' defensive call and the routes run by the offense, struggles that also occurred during walkthroughs in the lead up to games. Okay, we're going to get a full breakdown here, folks. During week one's game against the Rams, quarterback Matt Stafford threw a 13-yard touchdown to tight end Davis Allen, who ran a corner route into the end zone, which Gardner Johnson was responsible for. Texans quarterback Kamari Lassiter tried to clean up the coverage bust, but wasn't able to run down Allen. Houston lost the game 14-9. Guess what? Week two, Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Baker Mayfield threw an over route to wideout Ryan Miller for a 20-yard touchdown in the game's opening drive. The Texans were in cover two, which required Gardner Johnson to cover the deep right half of the field. He instead jumped a 10-yard in-breaking route to Buccaneers wideout Sterling Shepard, exposing the deep half for Miller's scoring reception. The Texans lost 20-19. And last week, against the Jacksonville Jaguars, the one that Clint was talking about, Gardner Johnson made a crucial mistake, according to team sources, with the game not at 10-10 late in the fourth quarter, jumping an outbreaking route by Parker Washington when he was responsible for anything over the middle of the field. Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence pounced on the mistake, hitting Brian Thomas on a post for a 46-yard reception down to Houston's 10-yard line against man-to-man coverage. Houston would allow Jacksonville Jaguar back Travis Etienne to score a play later, which allowed them to win. Also going on, compounding the coverage bust, Gardner Johnson has refused to take any responsibility for his mistakes, rubbing his teammates the wrong way, sources added, with one member of the team saying Gardner Johnson's finger pointed instead of owning up to his mistakes. I have never seen a team, me personally, maybe you have, I've never seen a team release a player and then give immediately in-depth stop-for-stop reason and breakdowns of plays that they've made mistakes on. I have never seen that. Never. You said it early, Clint. We're going to hear from C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I said, I don't know, man. Maybe he may just go and move on. No, not after this. This is crazy to me. They just said a team sources went and broke down all three individual plays. I am blown away by this, Clint. I cannot believe they went through and did this. I mean, detailed, telling us what coverage they were in. I mean, that is wild.
Well, it has to be an inside source because I've watched all three of these plays since those reports came out. And, you know, like I don't see the same coverage as like on the touchdown to Tampa Bay. Like if he's supposed to be in cover two and he's attacking the slot receiver on a little bit of an out route I think that one against Tampa was just a little snag route, then he's just completely running the wrong coverage. It strikes me, and it doesn't look like cover two because Bullock is actually chasing the slot receiver all the way to the other side of the field. That is a quarters coverage any way you slice it any day of the week. And is he being a little horny on the quarters coverage just in that game? Just like the only difference in the Tampa Bay game and the Jacksonville Jaguars game is it's the same coverage, but in Jacksonville attacking from the outside on the same side of the field that he's on when he jumped down, and Tampa Bay attacked him from the opposite slot, which you had Kalen Bullock in what should have been a man-to-man situation. I don't see those being cover two. I think they were both quarters coverage, and did he get horny and jump down on an underneath route? Yes, but that's always a gray area in quarters coverage of, like, when do you lock on to that underneath receiver? How aggressive do you want to be? And I'll argue that in D'Amico Ryan's defense, you never – like, you take away the quick throw, never expecting the quarterback to be able to hold the football long enough for that receiver to go all the way across the field and catch the ball in the back corner, right? The Tampa Bay throw I'm talking about. So – you know, I think all of these guys are even when they play zone, they're coached to be horny and jump routes. And so I don't know how to look at that. I can tell you right now it's not cover two. I can tell you they weren't playing cover two in either the Jacksonville or the Tampa Bay game. They're not playing cover two, period. They are playing cover two in the Rams game, And I've never seen, it was not two man, it was just a base cover two. I've never seen a dime defender on a slot receiver in a base cover two be responsible for the corner, whether it's a tight end or a running back. I mean, a tight end or a wide receiver. I don't see how. I think Kamari Lassiter maybe should have floated back and not jumped up so hard and given that throwing the ocean over the top. But I can't find a way where C.J. Gardner-Johnson was responsible for that. Now, maybe should he have bucked him off the line and not given him a free release, maybe? But if that is a cover two, a true cover two, it doesn't – like, that's not his responsibility. So, I don't – unless they're playing some crazy-ass coverages that I've never seen, they're not as egregious. Like, it's egregious. It's cuttable. It's finable. It's a finable offense if he's supposed to be playing cover two in those situations. He's playing quarters the way he is. It's also a fireable offense if Kalen Bullock's supposed to be playing cover two and he's chasing a receiver all the way to the back corner against Tampa Bay.
Or benchable.
Benchable. That's fine. I agree. It's not cuttable. But yeah, so I don't know how much stock I necessarily put in those reports. Because I don't think the coverages are spot on.
Tyler, please, let's keep an eye on C.J. Gardner-Johnson's social media of any kind.
Oh, I got
I'm glad you broke that down and you went and watched all three of those. Let's just say that they're 100% right. Like that this is something they be doing. I don't know. The level of... Is petty the word? The level of want to have it out there for the Texans team source to have this reported, break down stop for stop all three games, and they break down as you went through every coverage and exactly what he was supposed to do. Like even if they're completely right, I have never seen a team cut somebody or move on from a player. Damn sure not this organization. Move on from a player. This is an organization that don't say nothing. They don't ever say anything. Yeah. We still don't know what's going on with Joe Mixon. They don't say nothing. And they've given DJ Bieniemy an entire breakdown of everything that is wrong with C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I'm expecting the C.J. Stroud breakdown coming up next. I'm expecting the Lakin Tomlinson breakdown. I'm expecting the Cam Robinson breakdown next. Hell, they didn't do this to Kenyon when they moved on from him. They didn't. I mean, this is wild. Something happened in the last couple of days for this to get to this space that I've never seen an organization do this to somebody. I've never seen it.
Well, I mean, here's the deal, Ron, is if the reports that are coming out, if they're accurate reports and they're being reported that way, and he was supposed to be playing cover two in any of these instances, then... It's a fireable offense.
Wouldn't that just be a mess up? That's almost double fist.
But that's like what I'm saying. It's not cover two. I'm telling you. My point is that it's not cover two. The report is wrong. It's a quarters coverage. He's playing it in a super horny fashion, which is exactly what D'Amico Ryan's defense does.
Would you play him the whole game, though, Sunday?
If he had blown two coverages for a touchdown
like that?
No, he wouldn't have played. He wouldn't have played
90%.
No, not at all. Yeah, no. So I am very interested in where the reports are coming from. Just simply because they're not accurate. They're not accurate scheme wise.
Come from a team source that's got a pretty good breakdown.
I mean, I'm gonna tell you, man. The touchdown against the Rams. C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Everybody's playing zone. First of all, everybody's playing zone. Nobody's playing man. C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Kamari Lassiter are over a what I call flank, but two tight ends to that side. One's on the line of scrimmage, attached to the tackle. Another one's in the hip position off of him. Nobody's playing man. The inside defender, which was a dime defender, the only way he would be responsible for that corner route is if it were two man. And in this case, with this film, if it were two man, he was the only one playing. He was the only one that's supposed to be playing man. So everybody blew the man coverage because nobody played man, right? And so I don't know how you put that one on him. Which is very interesting. That's going to be anxious. I mean, I'm anxious to hear what. I can't wait for C.J. Gardner-Johnson's response because now
there's no way he's not. I wouldn't. Well, unless he's Bobby Slowick.
Well, now here's the deal. Before I was like, if you're him, you know, do you want to? Which I know he would. Do you want to burn bridges? Do you want to make your former team look silly? And it's like, maybe he'll soft shoe it. Maybe he'll move on. Maybe he'll do it, but he'll soft shoe. Now I think he's going to come out and empty the clip.
They packed him in the corner. All right, I'm interested in hearing you as we get going into 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Look, we've got a tape drop Tuesday. We discussed it a little bit earlier. I do want to put a bow on a couple of things. C.J. Stroud's play, according to the film, the offensive line move that has to be made according to the film, and then the third thing, a set of pass catchers that just aren't getting the job done. All of that is next right here on Sports Radio 610.